what are non-fungible tokens? I mean, first of all, what is fungible? Fungible is a term that means something that is replaceable, exchangeable. Originally, that was used as a finance term. Investopedia says fungible means interchangeable. Fungible goods are interchangeable because they're identical to each other for practical purposes. And fungibility is the ability of a good or an asset to be readily interchanged for another of the same kind. So like goods and assets that are not interchangeable would be like such as owned cars or your house are non-fungible. Money is a prime example of something that's fungible. When a dollar bill is easily convertible into four quarters or 10 dimes, so that's fungible. So non meaning no, and fungible meaning changeable, you have non-fungible. And now we have non-fungible tokens added to our vocabulary. What is a non-fungible token or NFT?
This is the One-Off Technology Podcast with your host, Roy Richardson. Each week we cover topics in the news and how they affect you. Sit back, relax, and open your mind.
What is a non-fungible token or NFT? It's how you can make digital goods one of a kind. If I have a picture of my kids as a PNG file on my desktop, and I can copy the file hundreds of times, I could share that same image with different file names on Facebook or other social media, and I can send it via email to my mom. And all of these are copies of the same file, but how do we know which is the original? I mean, for example, the Mona Lisa exists in the Louvre in Paris, France, and we assume that that picture on the wall is the original, and yet we all know the Mona Lisa. But the rest are all copies and not the original. So say I want to be able to confirm to the world that an original digital image I took with my cell phone of my kids is the original. How do I prove that? This is where cryptocurrency comes in. So a long time ago, okay, 2012, if that's a long time ago, this group of folks used a unique transaction code of buying cryptocurrency. A group called Colored Coins. And these coins represented the smallest unit of bitcoins, a Satoshi. If you listen to episode 1, I go in a lot more detail about Bitcoin. But basically, this colored coin represents a bitcoin. But things didn't take off from there, and there were flaws in the system. So next up came Counterparty around 2014. And they used the concepts that were essentially Bitcoin 2.0 to create collectibles that were represented by an amount of Bitcoin. And it allowed folks to buy and sell digital assets. Because it was certified against the Bitcoin transaction ID, these collectibles couldn't be counterfeited. So now I can take that image file of my kids and I can tie it to Bitcoin, and then I can sell the Bitcoin that represents this image. In 2017, there was a group called Cyberpunks, and they created these digital collectibles based off Ethereum. And they created, well, and Ethereum's basically a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin. Probably heard them used interchangeably, but they're not. They're different. And right now, Ethereum is worth less than Bitcoin, but it's really ramping up, and the magic is happening out there. Anyway, this group created 10,000 of these crypto characters, and they were quickly snapped up. So then, because the internet loves cats, in that same year, there was this thing called CryptoKitties created. And these look like cards, like, you know, I'd say like baseball cards, and they were intended to be part of a game. And if you look at the drawings, go out and Google CryptoKitties, you look at the drawings, they remind me of the Oatmeal's Exploding Kittens animation. I wonder if the guys are connected. And these sold well for a while, but rarely for crazy sums of money. But I think some of them sold for like upwards of like $600,000. But the point being is that it proved out the concept of NFT, non-fungible tokens. And this same concept has been used now to sell digital parcels of land in a video game. And time passes, things happen, and here we are in 2021. After a long period of time trapped in our houses, where the internet has become even stranger than before because we're so trapped, we need a creative outlet like, say, a podcast. Anyway, so suddenly the world is crazier and folks are selling virtual NBA trading cards, and they're essentially short clips of video moments in a basketball game for crazy money, and a certified copy of Nyan Cat, the gif of the, you know, the cat with the Pop-Tart look to it that has the rainbow coming out of its butt and it's flying through the sky. Well, that sold, you know, they turned it into a non-fungible token, and Ethereum gives it a token portion, gives it the token portion of this puzzle, and it sells for crazy money. And yet, these non-fungible tokens, these digital images are ones and zeros. Another example, Beeple, a digital artist, he creates a picture a day. Really neat, kind of abstract art. Kind of reminds me a little of Salvador Dali in a digital realm. But he takes all of his works up to that date and creates a single image. And someone buys it from Chrisley's auction for $69 million. So now NFT makes news, because money always makes things bubble up for a bit. And such big money has everyone selling anything as an NFT in order to make money. In fact, I think I'm going to create an NFT for the last episode of season 2 of this podcast. I'm going to sell it. And in another episode of the podcast, I'll tell you about my adventure. But the point being is that NFTs are digital, ones and zeros. They're like buying armor for your items in Minecraft, or like buying a digital file of a song. And you have to realize that this may be a bubble, or this may keep going. And I think for right now, it's going to keep going. So it's going to be interesting. So if you were interested in Bitcoin and Ethereum, maybe now you're interested in NFT. And if you are looking for a way to take your digital art and turn it into something that people can buy, this is your way of certifying that that item is legit. And I do think that has a merit on the internet. And we are going to look for something that makes it possible to say, this is the original that I did. Maybe non-fungible tokens are the way to go. And now, chapter 2. I pause for a moment to drink water. Are you staying hydrated? You gotta stay hydrated. And now, chapter 2. Have you ever wondered what Google knows about you? No, seriously. I mean, you know, what does Google know about you? Do they know how old you are? Do they know if you're male or female? Do they know what websites you visit frequently? Do they know what you like to buy? See, Google has a way of tracking you in all the places you go. And so the ads that you see are tailored to you because they've noticed what you, where you go and what you do, and to the point where they even kind of notice when you hover over an image. If it's set up as part of a Google ad, they're like, oh, that was a hot spot on that page. People are hovering over that, and must be something to it. So if you go to a website, and this is what you're going to have to type this in or do a search for it. If you go do a search for ad settings, Google, AdSettings.com. So AdSettings.Google.com/authenticated. So AdSettings.Google.com/authenticated. And I will put this in the show notes on the website. Go there. You will have to log in. You'll have to be logged into your Gmail account. That's assuming you have one. But who doesn't? And you'll have to be logged in order to get to this page. And once you go there, you're going to see craziness. You're going to see that Google has an approximate guess of how old you are. So when I go to the page, Google thinks within 10 years of how old I am. It basically says 10 years this way or 10 years that. So that's kind of scary. And you know, when you just think about it, it's just the craziness that Google knows so much about us. You go out and find out what Google knows about you, and you can turn some things off that Google knows about you. Google knows that I'm male. It knows that my predominant language is English. It knows that I have some curiosity about Bitcoin and that I shop at Walmart and eBay. And it obviously knows about my musical addictions. It thinks I'm into country, hip-hop, jazz and blues, and heavy metal. And yeah, you know, I'm kind of. And it also knows some basically YouTube celebrities that I follow, because there's several that I follow. It knows about. It knows that I go to Publix to buy groceries sometimes. It knows several sites that I buy products from. And it knows that I'm into Android phones and Apple phones and camera equipment and cloud storage and that productivity software and emailing and finance and gourmet and specialty foods and GPS and navigation. It knows so many things about me. And if you go out there and you find things that you say, well, that's not me, you can turn those things off temporarily. Admittedly, if you say, well, I'm not into underwater basket weaving, and you turn off underwater basket weaving, and then you proceed to go and visit underwater basket weaving websites, eventually it's going to show back up on this page. You're going to know again, oh, yeah, Roy really is into underwater basket weaving. We really have to, you know, go and see that. And I turned off some stuff. So, for example, I turned off some advertisers because they've been spamming the heck out of me. So, for example, I've been on YouTube lately, and I swear the B&H photo video has popped up in YouTube a million times. I try very hard to skip ads when it allows, and then sometimes there's ads that won't let me skip. And that one's gotten old. I can almost quote the ad. It has two folks in Alaska, and it's talking about, these are real B&H customers, and they are wildlife photographers, and so it's kind of funny. But, you know, Google is tracking me. Also, Antelope Audio is following me around. It probably found that I'm into buying musical equipment and stuff like that. But when I went and looked at their prices, that is not something in my budget range. So I'll never be buying from those folks. Unless they want me to review something, they're welcome to send me something, I'll review it. But anyway, the point being is that they look like they make nice stuff, but their prices are, I'm not a pro. I'm not even semi-pro. I am definitely amateur at best. And so those aren't things I can afford to buy. But the point being is that we all have digital souls on the internet. I have often joked that I sold my digital soul to Google in 2004. That was the year Gmail started, and I was lucky enough to get an invite. So kind of like Clubhouse. Clubhouse is the latest social thing. It's an audio social thing. And Clubhouse is invite only. Well, when I joined Gmail, Gmail was invite only. And so I've been with Google since the early days. And over the years, they've sent me many cool trinkets. they have sent me t-shirts and a Google Mouse. Sadly, my Google Mouse died. It was a really neat little folding mouse. I kind of liked it because I could take it with me on trips and stuff, but it died. I'm sad about that. They have given me multiple Google Minis. They even gave me a Chromebook once. And that's a fun story for another day. When the CR48 Chromebooks came out, the very first gen Chromebooks, they gave out 60,000 of them, and I was one of the lucky recipients. So that was really cool, and I really still love Chromebooks. And how is Google collecting this data? They're tracking it through ads. They're tracking it through cookies. And so they know all the things that you click on. They're seeing what you're doing. And Facebook is doing the same thing, too. Google hasn't cornered a market, but we are building these digital personas out there. And so the question is, who are you online? And now, chapter 3. So, are you sharing your Netflix password? No, seriously, are you sharing your Netflix password with somebody? So, Netflix has been experimenting with two-factor authentication. Not necessarily to make you more secure, though that is a perk. But perhaps they're slowly looking to prevent password sharing. So Netflix is out there testing our appetite for cracking down on password sharing. I'll give an example of password sharing. My oldest son spent some time in Argentina as a work study student in college. And many months after his return, I looked at my Netflix settings one day and it pointed out all the places where I was logged in at. And, well, somebody in Argentina was still using my Netflix account. So I wonder why Netflix kept suggesting I watch Spanish language programs. I'm embarrassed to admit it, but I took a couple of semesters of Spanish in college. And, unfortunately, I didn't do my homework. So I don't still speak Spanish or read it very well. I can pronounce Spanish words thanks to those classes, but I no longer speak Spanish or read it, so it's going to be a challenge for me to watch Spanish language programs. So that's my own fault. So I had several folks reach out to me this week after I released the first episode of the podcast, and I just want to thank you so much. I am so thankful to you guys for listening to this podcast. I'm thankful to those that reached out to me. And I would love for more of you to reach out to me as well. I am reachable on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @aroyrichardson. So @aroyrichardson on Twitter. So feel free to send me a message or tweet out to me or send me a DM. Look forward to seeing you. I'm also on Clubhouse as Aroy Richardson. So if you happen to be on Clubhouse and looking for me, be sure to follow me out there. I am just kind of scoping around and getting a feel for whether I like Clubhouse or not. I haven't figured out what my path is yet, but Clubhouse reminds me of a talk radio and a podcast crossed together. And so it's neat and already everybody is looking to copy it. Twitter's out there trying to create their own audio thing. And so it's going to pick up prevalence for a bit and get in your face. Facebook is also looking for a Clubhouse of their own to do. But also, Facebook is going to go bigger with video. They plan by 2022 for 80% of all shares on Facebook. Sorry, I was going to say Twitter. On Facebook to be video. And they're trying really hard to compete with YouTube. And so they're doing a lot of ramping up to get ready for that. So, looks like our future's audio and video. Hope we all have enough bandwidth. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. Again, reach out to me if you have some hints, suggestions, or questions. I would love to hear from you. Thanks. Have a great week.
Bye.
listening to the One-Off Technology Podcast with your host, Roy Richardson. Be sure to subscribe wherever you find your podcasts on Apple, Google, Stitcher, and Spotify.